please stand for the reading? I'll be reading Genesis chapter 44, verses 14 through 17. When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. They fell before him to the ground. Joseph said to them, "What deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination?" And Judah said, "What shall we say to my lord? What shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my lord's servants, both we and he also in whose hand the cup has been found." But he said, "Far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father."
You may be seated.
Our next song will be "This Is the Day." That's number 15. This is the day, this is the day that the Lord has made, that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it, and be glad in it. This is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. This is the day, this is the day that the Lord has made. Our next song will be number 103, "The Love of God." The love of God is greater far than tongue or pen can ever tell. It goes beyond the highest star and reaches to the lowest hell. The guilty pair bowed down with care. God gave his son to win. His erring child he reconciled and pardoned from his sin. O love of God, how rich and pure, how measureless and strong. It shall forevermore endure the saints and angels' song. Could we within the ocean fill, and where the skies a parchment made, with every stall on earth a quill, and every man a scribe by trade, to write the love of God above would drain the ocean dry. Nor could the scroll contain the whole, though stretched from sky to sky. O love of God, how rich and pure, how measureless and strong. It shall forevermore endure the saints and angels' song. Our invitation song tonight will be number 886, "Nothing But the Blood."
If you have your Bible, turn back to Genesis 42 through 44, where we'll be studying this evening. Story of Joseph once again. We'll take a couple weeks break from the study of Joseph on Sunday evenings for a couple of reasons. We'll have spring break and some other things going on, but we'll have a couple more lessons, one on the pardon and forgiveness that Joseph's going to offer, and then one on the purpose that God had in all this as we conclude this series. Tonight is one of the most fascinating parts of this story, because Joseph is going to develop a series of tests that he's going to put the brothers through. And we don't know for sure, But it's interesting to think about what Joseph had considered in his own mind for the basically two decades, about 20 years, that he had been living in Egypt. Probably wondering and thinking, what will I do if I ever see my brothers again? Will I be able to forgive them? Will I be able to trust them? Maybe he's thinking, and he had a plan. You know how you can, your mind can just wander, and as you have just hours of basically not being able to do anything in jail, you can imagine him just kind of daydreaming and thinking, if I ever get to meet my brothers. Remember, he had this dream from when he was a child that one day his brothers would bow down before him. So he's maybe thinking, I think it's a chance that I will see my brothers again one day. How will I trust them? How will I be able to have a relationship with them again? I don't know what Joseph thought in all those many days, but he certainly devised an amazing plan to go about learning if he could trust them and being able to know that he could forgive them. And so we're going to see this plan develop in chapters 42 through 44. And it's also interesting to consider if Joseph, if he had all this planned out like it's going to go like this, or if he just kind of did it on the fly and just kind of did it as it was going about. Seems that maybe the second alternative, that he might have kind of did some of this just as it goes, that it was kind of an emotional thing and it was kind of a managing thing for him. But in order to rebuild trust, which is what we want to kind of think about this evening and thinking about the concept of proving, how do you rebuild trust? How do you rebuild trust? In order to rebuild trust, Joseph had to know and he had to believe, number one, would they be honest? Would they be honest? And number two, he had to know that they were truly sorrowful and had repented. And so in our relationships, whether it's in a husband-wife relationship that's gone through hard times, whether it's in another family relationship, whether it's in a work relationship that might have gone through some difficult times, or maybe it's in a friend relationship, or even brethren in Christ, we must ask the question, how do we rebuild trust? Well, we have to know a few things. We, number one, have to know that each person is being honest. They're being truthful. And then we also have to, if there's been hard feelings and there's been difficulties, we have to believe that they are sorrowful and that they're willing to repent. And so we're going to find out both of these things. Joseph's going to get his answer to both of these things in this story. Notice there's three tests that he's going to give his brothers. They're going to be tested first in honesty. Now, we left off with Joseph rising to second in power of Egypt. And of course, they had the 7 years of plenty, and now it's the 7 years of famine. And Joseph is now going to have to divvy out that 7 years of plenty during the years of the 7 year of famine. And so people are coming to Egypt. And of course, this leads to chapter 42, his brothers going down to Egypt. So Jacob learned, verse 1, that there was grain for sale in Egypt. He said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" He said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die." This was a matter of survival. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain. Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brothers, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land, and Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers. Verse 7. He recognized them. He treated them, though, like strangers, and he spoke roughly to them. "Where do you come from?" He said, they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them, and he said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said, "No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We are sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies." And he said to them, verse 12, "No, it is the nakedness of the land that you have come to see." They said, "We are your servants. Our 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. Behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more." And Joseph said to the men, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested." He's testing them on their honesty. Now he knew the truth of this, but he's wanting to find this out, and he's wanting to set up a series of tests here. "Tested by the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here." See Joseph's plan, wanting to get Benjamin, and we're going to see how that's going to come about later and why he wants Benjamin to come to Egypt. "Send one of you, let him bring your brother while you remain confined, so that your words may be tested whether this is truth in you. Or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." And he put them in custody for 3 days. On the third day, he's going to bring them out. He's going to say that he's going to let all of them go except for Simeon. He's going to keep Simeon back in prison and not going to allow him to go. Now, in verse 21, the brothers are fearing that this is being brought upon them because of their actions toward Joseph. "In truth, they said, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us, and we did not listen. That is why this distress has come upon us." Reuben said, "Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy? But you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood." They didn't know that Joseph understood them in speaking these things. Joseph told them to put money back in their bags, and they all went except Simeon, who stayed back. Let's make a few thoughts from this story. First of all, they claim to be honest men. And we know they were telling the truth. They were telling the truth that Jacob was still living, that they were 10 brothers. Benjamin was there, and of course Joseph was no more. They claim to be honest men. But notice they feel guilt. Commentators think, and we're looking at the dates, the hints that we get from the text, that it's been at least 2 decades or more. 20 years. What thing, what activity do you feel guilty from 20 years ago? Probably there may be something. But it was probably something very significant that impacted your life that you still feel remorse or sorrow for. These brothers felt all the time like they were going to get what was due them because of this act they committed 20 years ago. They were still feeling guilt over it. When William Shakespeare in King Henry VI said, "Suspicion always haunts the guilty mind." Certainly they were haunted by this deed they had done. And we're going to find out throughout this passage that it's like every time something bad happens, they say, "Oh, here it is. It's about to happen to us. Here it is. We knew it was coming." And it's like they've been living that way for 20 years, thinking we're going to get punished for what we did to Joseph. That's a terrible way to live. Guilt robs you of your joy. Guilt will starve you from your happiness. And it will cause you to be suspicious of everything. In fact, in some ways, and if you think about people who are in the false doctrine of Calvinism, and for example, if you've studied much of our founding fathers, the Pilgrims and others who came over and who were, the Pilgrims were very Calvinistic, and they were always, I read a history book one time about them, and it talked about their religious beliefs and things, and they were very suspicious and very negative, always trying to figure out some sign. If this is coming upon me because, and it was always because of some guilt or some problem they'd done, just ruins your happiness. If you're living life thinking, like that famous sermon of the 1700s, "Sinners in the Hand of an Angry God," that God is always looking to just strike you down for what you did years ago. Well, that's where these men were. That's where these brothers were. They felt guilt. You know, guilt cannot be absolved. It can't be dealt with until you're honest until you're willing to deal with it. Honesty is so important. Honesty is necessary in all areas. Joseph's going to, throughout, we're going to look at chapter 43 and 44 and the other points, but really honesty is going to go through all these points. They had to be honest with Jacob, honest with Joseph. And honesty, as you're trying to rebuild a relationship, and this is something in so important for married couples that have had some kind of problem. Excuse me. That is, if you're going to rebuild your trust, you have to be honest in all areas. I'm reminded of a story about a man who went by KFC and he ordered two chicken dinners, the box chicken dinners, and he passed out the order and the KFC bag, and they went to the park. They were going to eat their chicken dinners at a picnic, and they get there and they open up their bag and they look inside, and it is filled with cash. Filled with cash. And so they say, wow, there's some mistake here. We ordered chicken and we got cash. And so they go back to KFC. True story. They go back to KFC and they tell the manager, they say, look, something happened here. We're returning this money. This is not our money. We ordered chicken and all we got was this cash. And the manager said, I am so thankful y'all came back. He said, this is all of our money. I was just going to go to the bank and deposit what they had earned, what they had made from the registers that entire day. And he said, I put it in a bag, KFC bag, and I set it right there. And then I had your meal in a bag sitting right here. And I grabbed the wrong bag and passed you the cash instead of passing you the chicken dinner. And so he said, well, look, he said, it's so rare to find honest people today. Let me call the newspaper. Let me get the newspaper to come out. I want them to take a story, take a picture of you all, and put that in the paper about this honest deed you've done. Because this could have really cost our store a lot of money and maybe hurt my job. And the guy, he kind of pulled the manager close and he said, I don't think we need to do that. You see, the woman I'm with is not my wife. Now, he was honest, wasn't he? In one area. He was honest in one area. You want to ask his wife if he was honest? I don't think she would think he was too honest. You see, honesty, if we're going to rebuild trust, involves being honest in all areas. And that's what Joseph wants to know from his brothers. Is, all right, are you going to be honest in all areas? And we're going to find out that they're going to be tested throughout. And so in chapter 42:29 through 43:14, we find that they're tested in love. Tested in love. So Simeon is left behind and they return to Jacob. And you remember that Jacob had an issue with favoritism 20 years ago when he clearly favored Joseph more than the other brothers. And now, of course, he's favoring Benjamin, the youngest son of Rachel, who she had when she was passing, dying. And so he loved Benjamin so much. And Benjamin is probably about 20 years old. One commentator said he thought he was 23 years old. So you're looking at that early 20s age. And they return and they tell him, verse 31, that how they had this interaction with this man, Joseph. They don't know it's Joseph, but this man, and asked them, are they honest men, and how he accused them of being spies. And they said that we have to bring back Benjamin with us. Verse 34, bring your youngest brother to me. Then I shall know that you are not spies, but honest men. I will deliver your brother to you, and you shall trade in the land. So it said, in order to trade more, in order to get Simeon back, you have to bring Benjamin. And as they emptied their sacks, they found all the money that they had bought. So this kind of adds to the idea, now we got all this money. And so, Reuben, verse 37, said to his father, kill my two sons if I do not bring him back, speaking about Benjamin. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead. He is the only one left. Now notice that statement. He's the only one left. If harm should happen to him on the journey that they are to make, you would bring my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol. Later on in chapter 44, verse 30, Judah will say about his father that his life was bound up in the life of Benjamin. Jacob's love is being tested here. And in many ways it fails, because Jacob's love is really being tested between Simeon and Benjamin, or the other brothers and Benjamin. And he clearly shows that he loves Benjamin more. Now, it's interesting what 20 years does to you, because it seems that 20 years ago, the brothers were so upset at the favoritism of their father, they had such jealousy and hatred for their brother that they were going to kill him, but then decided to sell him into slavery. But now, they have almost accepted it. It's almost like they've just said, that's how Dad is. We know how he is. We know where we rank. And they know that Dad loves Benjamin more than us. And we're not going to try to kill Benjamin. Not going to do that. In fact, they are so worried that he's not even going to let them go back and get more grain, or that he's not going to allow them to go back and get their other brother, Simeon. And so all the brothers understood where they were. There's some sense, too, where the brother's love is being tested. And see, Joseph is orchestrating this entire test. Would the brother's love be greater for Simeon or for Benjamin? Joseph wants to know, he's got a brother. Are they going to do the same thing to Simeon that they did to him? And then he also wants to know, we'll find out more later, are they going to do the same thing to Benjamin that they did to him? Before Joseph will trust them, he wants to know, have you changed? Are you still going to betray one of your brothers? Are you still going to kill and sell one of your brothers if you have the opportunity? He's giving them the opportunity. What is their love going to be like for Benjamin? What's their love going to be like for Simeon? We are tested in our love. When we think about restoring trust, people always will look to our love. We have to always measure our love not by the world's standards, but by God's standards. The world often focuses on emotional type love. God's love is sacrificial, sometimes tough, and does what's best for the other person. Our love should be like Jesus. We're tested, and other people are looking at us to see, do you love like Jesus? And we're being tested in our relationships to see, do we really love? And when we think about this story here, and Simeon and Benjamin, and this whole idea of they knew Jacob's heart, those of us who are parents need to realize that our kids are always testing our love in many ways. And we don't need to try to, sometimes you see this in situations, especially where there's been a divorce or fracture, where people try to, quote, buy their love of children. And that's not what we're talking about here, where we should try to get into that kind of idea. But we need to understand that our children are asking, are they loved? And then they also ask this question, am I loved as much as, and then they give that sibling. These brothers knew. They weren't loved as much as Benjamin. They knew it, didn't they? Our love is being tested in our children. Our love is being tested when it comes to friendships and relationships. We need to love like Jesus. Think about Jesus. Jesus loved the rich young ruler. He told him what he needed to do, but it was hard, wasn't it? Jesus looked at him and loved him and said, go and sell what you have. Jesus loved the Pharisees. He loved the multitudes who crucified him. As he hung up on the cross, he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That's love. That's a test. When people betray you, when people spit upon you, figuratively in our culture probably more so, we've got to love like Jesus. We've got to love like Jesus. And people are going to be looking at us and they're going to say, that person's a Christian. I know they're a Christian because of their heart. In 1 John chapter 3, verse 16, 1 John 3:16. John 3:16 talks about God's love for us, but 1 John 3:16 talks about our love for others. By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, that we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. We ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. Our love is being tested. Like Jacob, we'll be tested in our families. Like the brothers, we'll be tested in our love for our fellow man and our fellow brothers. And like Jesus, we'll be tested in our love for our fellow man. Love often means sacrificial giving. It often means forgiveness. It often means bearing with one another. Love is difficult sometimes. But we're going to be tested in our love if we're going to regain and restore trust. The third thing we see in the story, as the brothers are being proved, is that they're tested in sacrifice. Back to Genesis chapter 43 through the end of chapter 44. So, Jacob eventually gets very, very hungry. I mean, that's kind of what seems to happen here. It gets to the point of, he says, you're not going, no way you're going, until it gets desperate. They're all starving. They're all in need of grain. And they say, look, Father, you got to let us go. We've got to go. And they promise that they'll bring him back. And they even, the brothers even commit their own lives, their own children, as you saw with Reuben, that if they don't bring him back, then they will suffer the punishment for it. And so they then are allowed, Jacob allows them to go. In verse 8, Judah said to Israel, to Jacob, send the boy with me, we will arise and go that we may live and not die. So they were at the point of survival. But we and you and also our little ones, I will be a pledge of his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice. So Jacob relents, and he allows them to go. Now, when they get there, Joseph is going to focus in on Benjamin. I'm going to have to tell you this story because it's kind of long in reading. But they get there, and Joseph sees them, and he sees Benjamin, and he sets up a big meal for them. He is going to show obvious favoritism to Benjamin with a purpose. He sets them in the order of their ages, kind of maybe trying to give them a little clue and also just to kind of throw them off. And he makes them eat separately from himself. And remember, Joseph can speak Egyptian language, so they can't understand him, but he speaks their language, so he understands them. He'll give Benjamin five times the food of the rest of them. And then he's going to send them back on their way. Simeon is released. He sends them back on their way. They had explained about how the money was put back in their sacks. And he tells them that, you know, that was fine. There's no problem with that. But this time he puts the money back in their sacks. But he puts his silver cup that he used, it says, for divination. It was a special cup that he used. And he puts that in Benjamin's sack, unknowingly to the brothers or to Benjamin. And then he allows them, it's kind of like an old Western in my view, you know, he allows them to get down the path a little bit in their donkeys trying down the road. And then he sends the posse after them. He sends his steward and the police after them, if you will. And he says, go and find out whoever has the cup. And he says, you know, when they stop these brothers, they say, none of us have taken this cup. None of us has taken the cup. If you find who's taking the cup, then that person can go. And they say, we're going to take whoever has the cup. He's got to go back with me to jail and stand before Joseph. And of course, where's the cup? They're all shocked. The cup is in Benjamin's sack. Now, here is a key point. What are the brothers going to do? Are they going to allow Benjamin to go back by himself like they sent Joseph down to Egypt by himself? But notice, Benjamin is arrested and all the brothers will return. All the brothers are going to return. So, we'll pick up and read a few verses here. Verse number 12 of chapter 44. He searched, and beginning with the eldest and ending with the youngest, the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. They tore their clothes And notice this. Every man loaded his donkey and they returned to the city. Now the steward had made it clear that only the one in whom the sack, the cup was found, had to return. But the brothers said, "We're all going. We're all going." They tore their clothes. They returned to Joseph's house. They fall before the ground. And Joseph says to them, "What deed is this that you have done? Did you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination?" And talks to them about taking this cup. And he says, verse number 17, "Only the man in whose the hand the cup is found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father." So he tries to let them go, gives them permission to leave. And this leads to one of the most important speeches in the Joseph story. And it's the speech given by Judah. Now, before we read this speech, I want you to think about Judah 20 years ago. Back in chapter 37, Judah is the one in verses 18 and 19 who's involved in this with the other brothers when they say, "Let's kill him." And then in verses 26 and 28, I want you to read what Judah says. Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our own flesh." And his brothers listened to him. It was Judah who said, "Let's sell him into slavery. Let's pass him on down and make money for him. Why should we just let him be killed and not make any profit?" Now, 20 plus years later, he has this same opportunity to do that for Benjamin. To leave Benjamin and take his grain and go on back to Canaan. But this time, Judah will make a different decision. Judah is going to make a speech where he's going to talk about what has gone on. And before we look at this speech again, they were willing to put Benjamin and their father above themselves. And in this speech, I want you to notice that Judah, I don't think it's an accident that Judah is the one that does this, because Judah is the forefather of Jesus, right? The Lion of the tribe of Judah. It's through Judah that Jesus comes. And it is Judah who here acts like a Christ figure. He prefigures Jesus in that he says, what does Jesus do? Jesus offers his life for our life. Judah offers his life for the life of Benjamin. You think about where he has come from, selling his brother into slavery, to now saying, "I will offer my life for Benjamin." Let's look at a few of his words. Pick up in verse number 23. "Then you said to your servants, 'Unless your younger brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face again.' When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him the words of my Lord. And when our father said, 'Go again, buy us a little food,' we said, 'We cannot go down. If our youngest brother goes with us, then we will go down, for we cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us.' Then your servant, my father, said to us, 'You know that my wife bore me two sons. One left me, and I said, surely he has been torn to pieces, and I have never seen him since. If you take this one also from me, the harm happens to him. You will bring down my gray hairs in evil to Sheol. Now therefore, as soon as I come to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die." See what Judah's saying? Judah's saying, "I can't go home to daddy without his son. I promised him I would bring Benjamin back. I've got to bring Benjamin back." Verse 32. "For your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, 'If I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant to my Lord. "Let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father." Notice, they're willing to put Benjamin and their father above themselves. They're willing to offer his life for the life of Benjamin. Now in chapter 45, we're not going to get into this because that's next lesson. But in chapter 45, verse 1, Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by, and he cried. He's going to weep, and he's going to reveal himself in verse number 4 and say, "I am your brother Joseph." And so he had come full circle. He could now trust his brothers because they were honest men. They were tested in their love for one another, their love for their father, their love for even Joseph. And they were tested in their repentance. They were sorrowful, and they had learned from that mistake. They had learned from that guilt, and now they were willing to sacrifice themselves. They had completed a complete 180 from where they were, selling the brother into slavery to now offering their life for the brother. What a story it is. When you think about this lesson, and as we conclude, how do you rebuild trust? I think we do it the same way whenever you have that challenge in your life. You realize that you've got to be honest. You've got to be loving. And you've got to be sacrificial. Now, one thing I would say to close is that we should wisely test others, and we should expect to be tested. I don't think we should have a judgmental, harsh attitude, but we need to understand that really we're always being tested in our trust for another. If you own a business and you hire an employee, you do not trust that person the same way you do someone who has been trustworthy for 10 years, do you? As an employee, you know you're going to be tested in your honesty, in your love, in your service for others, and in your willingness to put others first. All of us are being tested every day. We should understand that we are going to be. In fact, we should want to prove these tests because that makes us what? Dependable and trustworthy. That's just the way it is. And we should also understand that we should wisely test others. I think sometimes in the church, especially, come back to marriage again. Sometimes in marriage, people think that once there's been some kind of problem, and then there's a reconciliation, that there ought not be a period of growing and testing. Again, we ought to just, forgiveness means forgetting. One thing I would say about that is, in marriage, in family relationships, in friendships, whatever relationship, in an employee relationship, whatever it is, that there needs to be time, and both parties should understand that there should be time for there to be these appropriate testing to see that everybody can gain that closeness and that trust back. That forgiveness can be granted, but trust is earned over time. That doesn't mean that we don't go the extra mile or that we don't try to you know, put ourselves out there. But it is important to realize that Joseph didn't say, "All right, as soon as those brothers come into town, hey guys, I'm Joseph, let me wrap my arms around you." He wanted to see what kind of men they were. The brothers had to understand they had to prove themselves. All of us must understand, and we should be humble enough to say, "I'm willing to prove myself. I want to prove myself in honesty, in love, and in putting other people before me." And so I would say all the teenagers are gone. I had this in here, but teenagers, young people, college students need to understand this. Is that when you start your first job or when you go to college and you're around new people, that you're going to be tested. And don't be like, "Well, they shouldn't worry about whether they should trust me." No, you've got to prove yourself. You've got to be accountable so that they can trust you. It's the same with other relationships. Wisely test others and expect to be tested. That's how trust is built. That's how trust is restored. And that's how trust is maintained. This evening, if you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to rededicate your life, please come as together we stand and as we sing.